Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 34, and it's the bye week. And I appreciate Chris Hoke coming on with us on Wednesday. Always good to talk to him and get his insights on what's going on with the Steelers. And, of course, the Steelers won't play this weekend. They're in Baltimore next Sunday at 1 o'clock kickoff at M&T Bank Stadium. And we'll probably have John Eisenberg join us on Wednesday. But, Dave, we got a little bit of an easy road here over the weekend today and on Monday's show. So we'll get to some questions. We'll talk a little bit more about what's going on around the league and some other things as well. But let's just kind of wrap up what happened Wednesday at practice and just a couple other things. Last kind of put a bow on the game that was the Patriots.
Yeah, you know, from an injury standpoint, I think, you know, of course, all eyes will be watching Ben Roethlisberger at the start of next week and when Mike Tomlin meets the media on Tuesday. I doubt Tomlin will give a definitive yes, Ben is playing, no, Ben is not playing, but he might play a couple of games with Baltimore. But if Baltimore knows, they should know by now that they should probably start preparing for a Roethlisberger regardless. And, you know, several of the other guys, Marcus Gilbert thinks he's going to be back this week. I think Wheaton thinks he's going to be back this week. I haven't really heard a definitive on Cameron Hayward. I think he's kind of...
I guess Cam's the one that I've heard, you know, that they might be a little cautious with because it was a severe pull, which would be basically a tear. And so kind of when I think about muscle pulls, I think 2 to 4 weeks always is kind of the guideline. So if it was, you know, serious tear, 4 to 6 weeks is can be closer to the truth. So I'm sure they're going to want to make sure he's right. Now, I do know that he was running this week. He was, you know, doing sprints. So you would think with, you know, now still kind of 9 days to go or 7 if you want to have him practice on Friday, you'd think that'd be plenty of time to get right. So fingers crossed, but yeah, there is some question about Cam.
Yeah, and I think I read where he's going to, you know, during the bye week, a lot of these players like to go back to their hometowns or whatnot, and I think I read where Cam said he's going to be staying, you know, close to the Steelers facility so he can continue on with his treatment. So we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed there. Cody Walls, I don't know what to, you know, you probably know more than I do on what the deal with Cody Walls is. We know he did have that procedure several weeks ago. One would think, and that you know, he might be close to being able to give it a go, but in his case, if he's not back on that field Wednesday, he's not playing the following Sunday. Pretty sure about that. And trying to think.
And in his case, you got to think, you know, he better be coming back sometime soon because if they need a roster spot, Cody Walls is. I mean, come on, you know, you not carried him. You didn't carry Sanquez Golson. You didn't carry Bud Dupree. I don't think the expectation was to be carrying Cody Wallace for 8 weeks now, which will be 9 when you get to Baltimore. So,
and you have to wonder now. I mean, shoot, we saw B.J. Finney in that nice performance that he had in what game was it against the Chiefs? And you know, he that's your guy. You know, I mean, that's your guy past this year, regardless, probably, is B.J. Finney being your backup guard, your backup center. Do you really need 9 offensive linemen on the 53 at this point? You know, I mean, you obviously want to have 8, but and you know they brought Mahalik back, signed him off of the Lions practice squad a few weeks ago. There comes a point where Cody Walls is like, you know, the fifth wheel here, if you will. But, I mean, I understand, I mean, if he's healthy, he's healthy. But I'm not even sure right now at this point he's your best option as a backup interior guy. So, yeah, the Steelers have a decision coming up whenever they put Ladarius Green back on this 53. And of the top three guys that you think that you would think are at risk of losing their roster spot, I have Xavier Grimble number one, Kobe Hamilton number two, and if that knee of Cody Wallace isn't better, then he rounds out the top three there. But as far as the rest of the injured, as we said, I think Marcus Wheaton thinks he's going to be back. Gilbert we covered, Wallace, Shamarco Thomas, have no idea on that groin whether or not he's going to make it back. Who else are we missing here on the injury list?
Well, I mean, you know, Sammy Coates, again, you know, if I had a question, one of my first questions is why is Sammy Coates in there hand fighting with a bad hand on special teams? And, yeah, you know, I realize you only have so many bodies, but we'll see. Sammy Coates gets, you know, 2 weeks to not do anything, let his hand heal up, which I would imagine will happen. Eli Rogers is probably back now to 100% with his toe, and it was interesting Richard Mann spoke after practice Wednesday and talked about Eli Rogers not, you know, complaining about the toe or anything, didn't mention anything about, you know, truancy or basically being late for a walkthrough or whatever the final answer was. It appears that that was a benching, not a, you know, it was a coach's decision benching, not injury, not, you know, not game plan to not use Eli Rogers because, again, I don't know if this has been he's a repeated offender, but Mike Tomlin's not the type of guy to let things linger. And so, you know, did the Steelers suffer for it? Damn right they did. And hopefully Eli Rogers learned a lesson. When he spoke early in the week, you know, this is one of those things where, I mean, I don't know that I can give a 100%, you know, perfect answer here, but this is where I think Eli Rogers owes it. You know, he didn't do anything criminal, obviously. I think you just go in the locker room and just say, man, I screwed up bad. Here's what happened. Boom. He was just like, you know, coach's decision, and being a bit obstinate about it. You know, own up to does he owe it to the media and the fan base? No, he does not owe it to them. But, you know, the word's going to get out. I just feel like just say, look, I screwed up. I got to do a better job. But because he's now got a, you know, he's got a strike against him. And, you know, we all have to at least to some degree speculate on what that strike is.
Yeah, and now we know with the walkthrough and all. So I mean, it didn't take long for that to surface. It was really peculiar. I mean, you look at the game, you don't see Eli Rogers, and then afterwards, you don't hear Mike Tomlin name him on the post game injury report. It was only going to be a matter of time before people actually, I think, found out, you know, what happened with him. Yeah, you know, the thing is, and I kind of mentioned this on the show the other day. At what point do you just find the guy? Do you have team fines to take care of that and still play him because you need him type of thing? I mean, obviously one player is not going to make a difference in the game, except maybe if it's your star quarterback. But, you know, could Eli Rogers have had help in that game? I definitely think so, and especially on some third down situations there. So he really did let down his team, and you know, let's just hope he's not rooming or splitting a house with Justin Gilbert and those two relying on each other to set the alarm.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where all of a sudden now you've got a perception, and I just go back to the whole conversation training camp 2 years ago. Mike Tomlin's walking up, starting, you know, practice is over, he's up the hill, and Eli Rogers is walking up ahead of him, and he's like, hey, 17, take a look over there. And he points to the other end of the field. Antonio Brown is, after every single practice, sitting there taking 100 balls off the jug's gun, catching them right-handed, catching them left-handed, turning
the
around.
The red zone defense
them.
Wasn't as good as it has been.
And his point being, you want to be good, you want to be great. It's not just, you know, you got to put in the time. And Eli Rogers, you know, dutifully turned and walked down to the jug's machine. But there's obviously a message being sent there. That was a long time ago. And now you know, you throw this on top of it, you just wonder, okay, is Eli Rogers kind of the guy who doesn't have good work habits?
Yeah, you do have to worry about that. And is he a guy that thinks that's gotten too comfortable too quick, you know?
Yeah.
Thinks he's above the law, if you will. And I mean, look, we don't know exactly what happened, but one would think that he probably just overslept and hauled butt to that walkthrough and was late. And that, you know, to hear some people report, it wasn't his first time that has happened. So definitely has to be more reliable. And like I said, he was a guy that the Steelers really could have used out on that field this past Sunday against the Patriots.
All right, Dave. How do you want to handle this? Should we get to the Ask Daves and get right into our questions?
Let's first. You know, you and I talked about things that led up to that play with Rob Gronkowski, the touchdown play in the previous podcast,
and Tom Brady mentioned in his weekly interview that, you know, he saw, you know, as I put up on, as I mentioned my blog, he saw things that led to that play call that Josh McDaniels made.
Right, and we talked about the comments that Brady had made, and then, you know, I talked about I wonder what they saw, you know, maybe earlier in the game, because that happened, of course, in what was it, the second drive of the third quarter. You'd have to think maybe it was stemming off of something that they saw in the first half, or maybe that first drive in the third quarter. Alex has gone back through that, and he did a video film room of this that went up on Steelers Depot this morning, and it's really, really insightful what he has there, and it shows that the times that the Steelers were in dime personnel, which wasn't many. It shows how one of the times when the Patriots were in 3-1, 3-by-1, how Ryan Shazier was the guy that carried Gronk up the seam. And you know, lo and behold, the Patriots got the Steelers in a situation, you know, on that touchdown where they got them in a too high situation, and instead of Shazier being on Gronkowski, it was Robert Golden. And boy, you really have to your eyes and your ears really have to perk up if you're Tom Brady in that situation. And while the Steelers ran a lot of cover two in those earlier situations. And I know Carnell Lake has come out and say, yeah, that was supposed to be Robert Golden, and making it sound like, you know, Sean Davis wasn't at fault there. It still very much looks like that was quarter half coverage, even though, you know, the things that Carnell Lake would tell you, it was cover, you know, straight cover two in that situation. If you really go back, and Alex does a good job breaking this down as well too, if you really go, you can really see the things that happened to that play that makes you think it's quarter half, or cover six, if you will. But that's beside the point. The thing is that Robert Golden still has underneath coverage on that, you know, regardless of what over the top was. Now, the Steelers had ran a lot of split safety looks, cover two looks in that game. And, you know, whether it was Sean Davis dipping outside or Robert Golden just not doing a good job of flipping and running, that's what the Patriots saw. And I think Alex really does a good job of setting that play up, because this people don't realize, and that's why I said this on the show the other day, it's usually adjustments that teams make, what they see on that film, running a certain personnel group or certain down a distance versus a different personnel group, that leads to a few play calls in the second half of the game. And you got to really tip your hat to Josh McDaniel and Tom Brady for them seeing that, because as we mentioned the other day, that touchdown play came on a 3rd and 7, and that's. You're going for it all in that.
It's a money play.
Yeah, it's a money play. It's a go big or go home, right? It's a big what if now. And of course, you could do this probably 13 times each and every game. What if the Steelers got a stop on that 3rd and 7?
Yeah, a couple things. One is, Tunch did a chalk talk on this the other day, and as he points out, I hadn't seen this before, that you know, there is an exact replica of the Chris Hubbard hold on Jamie Collins on the Steelers touchdown that was called on James Harrison. And I know people had tweeted to me about this play, and I got to see it finally. And it's the same thing. I mean, it's Harrison coming around the other edge. It's the right side for him, obviously. And I think it's Nate Soldier's just got him. He's got him up high. Harrison's feet go out from under him, but he has the leverage, the whole thing. It looks like, you know, a similar play. One gets called, one doesn't. And again, you know, if you're wish casting, you'd like to you get those things reversed, and you wonder how the game would go, because the Steelers got no points out of that. Right? They got no points out of that touchdown. That was the missed field goal drive. And obviously the Patriots on third down get 7 points, and maybe they're punting. So, look, the Steelers weren't the better team in this game. There's no question about that. But it just shows you a couple plays in here and there, and maybe we're having a different evaluation of it.
What do you think about the comments by Joey Porter that need to get Jarvis Jones on the field more?
Well, it's like Mitch saying he needs to get Stephon Tuitt on the field more. You're the damn coach. Put him on the field. I mean, you know, you're the coach. You're the position coach. You're basically making those decisions. So put him out there. I mean, you know, I think those comments are ridiculous. I mean, it's your job. Okay, do it.
And what he at the same time, he kind of left himself some room open saying why he had to try to get James Harrison in the game on a regular basis so that he doesn't, you know, kind of stiffen up, so to speak. That's the way I kind of took those comments there. Yeah, I mean, look, how many years did Pittsburgh go where there wasn't really a linebacker rotation outside? I mean,
no, and the only reason there is now is because the guys are nobody's any good.
I mean, basically,
that's it. I mean, it's not, you know, they're not, just like you said with Cam and Tuitt, when he played them, you know, every play last year. When I got somebody better, I'll get him involved, or when I've got somebody who can do the job. These guys, they're just trying to find somebody who has a, you know, for lack of a better term, has a hot hand, makes a couple plays, because none of them are doing it.
In other words, we should readjust the, was it Parcells that says if you don't have, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. If you have four outside linebackers, you don't have two.
I think that's right. I think his line was, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any. Right. Yeah, so
there you go.
So we can. The other thing is, as you mentioned, talking about looks and schemes and seeing things, just one of the things to watch in a game, and this is true kind of, you know, across the league, but, you know, we'll point it out so people can pay attention to it, is, you know, watching the first 10 or 15 plays of any team, kind of what they do formation-wise, because you'll see, you know, and this goes back to Bill Walsh in 15 plays, you know, you script a lot of things, you run different personnel in there, you do things, is because teams want to put all their looks out there to see what they get back and see what look they liked in terms of how they got the personnel matchups they wanted. And, you know, the Patriots are obviously great at things like this. But, you know, watch with Todd Haley when he does this in games. You'll see them come out in you know, 13 personnel or go empty set and do different things because early in the game, while you're obviously still trying to, you know, effectively move the football, you're taking inventory on what the defense is doing when you show different looks. So just something else to pay attention to.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely can learn a lot on that all 22 as well, too, when you go back through these games to see exactly where some adjustments are. And a perfect example that we just gave was with what the Patriots did there as well too. You want to see what you get different looks and where maybe you left something on the field on a certain play. That's why, I mean, that's why I'm so ecstatic to have all 22 these days. And now I'm greedy. I want that for college as well too. And I one would think at some point we would be afforded the opportunity to purchase all 22 from, you know, maybe a conference or something like that, because when you talk about getting into the draft and evaluating second, you know, players in the secondary and stuff like that, it really would be useful. But
I don't want to watch the all 22 from last night, because all it was is all two guys, all guys catching balls in orange.
Oh, you talking about the Vautech game?
Yeah.
Boy, I'm not sure what Pitt was trying to do there. They can stop. They can stop the run at times, but the pass not.
Doesn't do you any good if you're going to give up 400 passing every time, which they've now done three times, 400 plus three times this year. All right. Hey, listen. The mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Let our buddy Craig Oxhane guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Cleveland. If you're considering buying or refinancing a new home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. You can get Craig at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com, or you can just apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage, company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Well, Dave, with the bye week, we decided to go to the mailbag. And we got we used a hashtag I think you put out there, Ask Daves.
Ask the Daves.
Ask the Daves. All right. Ask the Jerks.
Ask the Bobs.
Ask the Bobs. All right. We got a good list of questions here. First, I also wanted to say that we had a visitor when I was doing my show last Sunday from Louisville. And what's going to be? Ben Holler. So he was kind enough. He comes up to a Steeler game every year. He is the jinx for the Steelers. He came up to watch them play the Ravens last year. Ben didn't play. He came up for the Pats game this year. Ben didn't play. But he is a longtime listener to the podcast. And when I was doing my pregame show at Atria's, which I do anytime it's not a 1 o'clock game, Atria's at PNC Park. Ben, his wife, and a couple of friends were kind enough to stop by and have some lunch and listen to me talk a little Steelers on the pregame show. So, Ben, thanks for listening. I said I'd get that out there on Monday. I'm a couple days late. So,
All right. Let's start off with a question here from Zach. Looks like Zach Cook, and I don't have my glasses on, and I'm blind.
Yep, Zach Cook is correct.
Blind as a bat here. What kind of impact can Steelers fans expect Ladarius Green to have on the offense? I know we kind of talked about this the other day, but I'll let you take first crack at this.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I think I'm the guy on the extreme in this one, and I have a lot of expectations for Ladarius Green, and it goes to the fact that, yes, we all get the fact that Ladarius Green has not had, you know, coming into this week, hadn't had one practice with the Steelers, so that's not good. But he is a four-year veteran, and they paid him because they think he has physical skills. Now, the key here was Ladarius Green, you know, he's on the PUP list. He's not suspended or anything. So he was in all the meetings. He's been talking with Ben. He's been working with, you know, John Daniels, and he's been working with, you know, Todd Haley. So he knows what's going on. He's been in the league, so he knows the route combinations and things like that. So getting up to speed, to me, shouldn't take all that much time. 2 weeks of practice, this week and next week, should be enough. Now, is he going to go in and catch 6 for 92? Probably not, but he definitely brings a different dimension. And I, you know, I had somebody tell me, they're not going to take playing time away from Jesse James. The hell they aren't. You're absolutely going to take playing time away from Jesse James. Jesse James is a functional, you know, maybe below the line functional blocker. He's been a good receiver. He is a good red zone target. I'm not knocking Jesse James. It doesn't mean fifth round picks can't be great. Antonio Brown was a sixth round pick. But Ladarius Green is a guy you just paid $20 million to. And Jesse James never in his career is going to get a 4-year $20 million contract. So you signed him for a reason. He's going to go in there. He's going to play. And hopefully he's a big contributor.
Yeah. And when you talk about and the way that Zach phrased this question, what kind of impact? I think his impact can be made by what he might open up, you know, for other players on the field. I think he can have an impact of maybe softening some of the double teams, maybe that Antonio Brown sees. More than anything, it's going to be hard to cover him, very hard to cover him with the linebacker and the safety. What one would think. I mean, will the Steelers? It'll be interesting to see how Todd Haley uses the personnel groupings. I mean, are we going to see more 12? I mean, we saw a lot of 12 in that game against the Patriots, but that was primarily because of Eli Rogers not being on the field. Can you run some 12 and start doing to some teams what teams like the Patriots and the Bengals, you know, have done recently to the Steelers with the kind of the two tight end groupings? As far as stats go, let's assume he plays in 9 games. Like I said, I will be surprised if he has more than 30 catches over the course of the last 9 games. just because of the fact that, that Roethlisberger, I think, is going to spread the football around. I think he can make an impact for you more than anything in the middle of the field. And that's something that we probably don't see Roethlisberger and the Steelers exploit enough, is the middle of the football field. So, look, he is going to help this offense. I mean, it's just – and I think Zach – proposed this question just perfectly. It's the kind of impact that he can have, and that maybe that impact is not so much from a catch standpoint as it is to what it might open up for other receivers on the field.
I think that's fair. So, all right. So that's question one. Let's get to. Let me see if I can pick one out here. I should have had one ready for.
I'll do the next one while you find the next one. Beaver Falls, okay. Hosiery, Sub Burger. He's a big contributor on the side as well too. What defender needs to improve most for the defense to start clicking? And my quick answer to that would be yes.
Yeah, pick your outside linebacker of choice. You know, if anybody can go reel off 8 sacks in the last 9 games of the season, they win. Again, I keep coming back to this. This is not a secondary problem. And I'm not telling you the secondary is playing great. They're not playing great. They don't catch the ball. They're not making splash plays. But this is a rush problem. And however you want to define it, those guys got to do better. Now, you missed Cam for a long period of time. You know, two, it's been a bit up and down. And I do, by the way, I do agree with the idea that the offensive line has been a bit up and down, DeCastro in particular. But this is a pick your outside linebacker. Whoever you want it to be, that's who it has to be.
Yeah, if you're going to pick anybody in the secondary right now, I think you have to point at Artie Burns. I mean, just against the run, not so much against the pass with Artie. It's more about his play against the run and that crack and replace and you know, making sure he stays outside. Everything that goes along with reading and reacting to the run. You know, he's got such long arms, and you go back to his tape in college and how he didn't use those arms when being stock blocked by receivers. This is a guy that I don't think is allergic to contact. I just think he hasn't been taught properly how to do all this. You know, he ran track at Miami, so there's a lot of time off in the off away from football during the off season. This is, remember how Mike Tomlin or Kevin Colbert, and they'll probably remind us after the season is over that 2016 was essentially Artie's senior year. I'm afraid we're going to hear that quite a bit during the offseason here. But, you know, he's played enough games now. We should start seeing some improvement with him. As far as, you know, the rest of the defense goes, yeah, as David points out, Take your pick. These guys have got to start doing a better job of getting after the quarterback, and not just getting after the quarterback. You'll hear Keith Butler talk about this a lot too. They've got to finish. I mean, how many times have we actually seen them get some pressure only to either let the quarterback escape or in the case of, say, Ryan Tannehill a few weeks ago. He of you know Daniel McCullers got back there thought Tannehill had gotten rid of the football and really essentially stopped on the play and you know Tannehill rolls out to his side and delivers the football, and I think at one point in that play too I think William Gay maybe thought Tannehill was going to go out of bounds. So you know you got to play until the whistle blows completely, but finishing the play is very important. But yeah, I would say Artie Burns and take your pick of whatever outside linebacker like David said. I mean make no mistake, this defense has got to play not just a little better. They've got to play a lot better during these final 9 games.
Mikey Mike says, will Love Bell test free agency, or does he get a new contract or get franchise tagged? The franchise looks like for running backs, it's going to be it'll be north of $10 million. I think there's no chance Love Bell's a free agent now next year. I think it will be a new contract or franchise tagged. And I feel pretty strongly about that. I think Love Bell's going to get paid.
Yeah, he's going to get paid. It's just a matter of how it gets done. And you would think that he would be smart to first make the Steelers put the franchise tag on him, because that at least sets an average yearly value and some guaranteed money for him. You know, do you risk using the transition tag on him, David? You know, where you know, the compensation. Did, you know,
they still have that? No, I'm not playing any games with Le'Veon Bell. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, if you use a transition tag, you only have the right to match the offer. You know, and that's you know, somebody could severely overpay him, which it only takes one team to do that, and then you're out of luck then. So no, I do not think they will use a transition tag on him. I think you will see a franchise tag and then some sort of a long-term deal working off of that. If they just let him walk right out the door with nothing, I mean, obviously they would receive at best a third-round compensatory pick. But there will be a lot of angry fans if that happens. So franchise him. Even if you had to string together a couple of years worth of franchise tags, you know, let's say you.
Yeah, he's going to be a Steeler next year. I'm pretty comfortable
with
that.
Yeah, as long as he keeps his nose clean between now and getting tagged. And you know, as I said several times, with that, I don't think Le'Veon Bell's a bad dude. You know, bad.
No, I don't think
bad
so.
Guy.
Martavis Bryant right now is seen as being a bad guy.
Right, right. I just think Le'Veon Bell just some wrong decisions in there, and you know, then missing a few of these tests because he's oversleeping, and boom, you get what you have. He needs to be more responsible than he is. And yeah, I'm with you. I think he's a Steeler in 2017.
Okay. Do you think Michael asked? Do you think Tomlin has said the whole? Only one with Cowher's team perception.
Excuse Bless me. You.
I never bought into it, so I'll let you answer.
Yeah, I never bought all this. Well, he's asking, has he shed the whole perception? No, he hasn't, because there's still a good amount of people out there that think that Tomlin only won with Cowher's team. Look, I mean, you still got a couple of those guys on the team. So if something was to happen, the Steelers make the run this year, you know, I think there's still going to be people that say, well, it's still Cowher's team because Roethlisberger's still there. Greg Warren's still there, you know. But I never had bought into that. I think each coach is his own, and it's not the coach's fault that he has carryover from players that another coach drafted. So no, I never have bought into that at all.
Steve asked how Carlos Williams has looked in practice. I can't give you. I don't know. I've not been out there the past last week. I was not out there, and then this week, short week, couldn't give you an answer. But you know, I did look at the Steelers practice squad yesterday, Dave, and I was actually thinking about this. If you had asked me on Tuesday to name the Steelers practice squad, I would have had a hard job coming up with five names. And you know, now I still couldn't name the whole list. They made a move. They made a roster move this week to sign an offensive lineman, and they waived a tight end. But we've seen kind of the couple guys go back and forth. Matt Filer, Al Shabazz has. Kobe Hamilton's come up from the practice squad. Darrell Richardson's gone down to the practice squad, and you've got Carlos Williams. Just off the top of my head, you've got Travis Feeney, the linebacker, the sixth round pick out of Washington.
And DeMarcus Ayers, another one of your draft picks, is
yeah, the punt returner out of Houston. So that, you know, that's about as good as I can do. I don't know the name of the new offensive lineman.
Kayvon Milton, and he is a guy, interesting guy, another one of those kind of switch position type players at one point, if memory serves me. So
Keshawn Lyons is another one, defensive lineman.
Right, Keshawn Lyons. Johnny Maxey was with the team during training camp and all.
Another defensive lineman. I think that might be the whole list.
Yeah, and I obviously don't know how Carlos Williams is doing at practice, but one would think, to be honest with you, probably not getting a lot of reps outside of the card offense, which of course is a scouting team offense. He's probably not getting a lot of first or second team reps with the normal offense. Now, even though D'Angelo Williams has been out, or been banged up the last few weeks, and of course missed the game last week against the Patriots, you know, you're probably giving a lot, most if not all of those reps to Fitzgerald Toussaint there. So even if Carlos Williams is getting a rep here and there, it's probably not much. And I think this is more of along the lines of, you know, who knows? You get into the playoffs and you want to go, you want to smash mouth a little bit with some teams. Maybe a guy that Carlos Williams is a guy that you call up later on in the year. So,
Carlos Williams to me was signed for next year. You know, it's going to have to be a serious injury to have him be the next guy. And I'm not even sure he'd be in front of Daryl Richardson, who was with the team all through camp at the start of the season. So I bet a lot of money we don't see him this
you
year.
Think there – what put a percentage chance on Carlos Williams being signed by another team off of the Steelers practice squad?
I think because of the family tie and some other stuff, it's probably pretty low, and it's it probably goes lower as the season goes on, because if it's just for one game check and it's not like a playoff team, which is more likely to be the case. You know, it's, again, we talk about guys getting through the waiver wire. This is a little different scenario, but Carlos Williams is not a young guy. He's got a little bit of a rap now that he's been suspended. So I don't think teams are pounding the door to go get him.
But we agree that the running back position is a kind of a fungible position if they're not named David Johnson or Le'Veon Bell, right? I mean, and with that said, Carlos Williams does have some good stuff down on tape. And if you're a team like the Green Bay Packers right now, David, you know, you lost Eddie. You've lost James Starks. I mean, they had a wide receiver playing running back for them against the Bears, right? I mean, I know they traded for Niles Davis and all like that, but at what point around the league, being as how there's just, you know, with these running backs keep going? I mean, because look at Lamar Miller in Houston now. I mean, there's a chance, you know, he might miss some time with that shoulder injury. There comes a time where a guy like Carlos Williams looks kind of appealing. So I'm going to just – I mean, I would put maybe a 20% chance that a team goes after Carlos Williams before the end of the season, and it would not shock me if that happens, because, you know, let's face it, he does have you know, some tape on him. And, yeah, you know, say what you will, happened in Buffalo that kind of led to that exodus there. You know, he's had a few weeks now to get himself back in football shape. So if I'm a GM or you know, a personnel guy looking around the league right now, and I lose a running back and I need another one, I'm honing in on Carlos Williams.
Okay, I'll just stick to my stand. I don't think we'll see it. Okay, do we got a? From Steve that if Bud Dupree is planning on practicing again by week 10, can we realistically expect to see him in week 11?
Wow.
So if the question is 2 weeks of practice, could he be active? The answer is yes. And he could play some special teams and he could get a couple series. I don't think he'll be active the first week of practice, but yeah, I don't think it's unrealistic to think 2 weeks. Now, I don't know that he's going to go in and play 40 snaps, but, you know, they're a little bit desperate here. So I would not kind of look at past being the guide of how you deal with this, because I think if he's 100% healthy and he gets a good week of practice in and then has another week of practice, man, I'm going to the well and putting him in.
So you think at least 2 weeks worth of practice, though, right?
Yep, 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm with you there as well, too, because that's essentially what they're going to be doing with Ladarius Green here. There's some level of football conditioning, football shape that you think a player needs to get out there and run around for a week or so. Now, if you didn't, then you're going to really severely limit his snaps, you would think, come that Sunday. And I think that's going to obviously be the case with Bud Dupree as well. His first game back, I think I'll be so shocked if he plays, you know, 40 kind of snaps. And I think the real question when it comes to Dupree, and I think everybody listening will probably agree that, yeah, he's going to probably be back at some point. It's just what are people expecting him to provide when he does get back? That's the thing.
Something better than what they have.
Which is, this is a guy that recorded his first 4 sacks in the first 8 games of last season, and then essentially disappeared during the second half of his rookie season. Yeah, he talked about hitting a rookie wall, yada yada. What kind of wall is he hitting this year? And remember, we're talking about a guy that when he came out of college didn't have a full bevy of counters and moves, and you know, wasn't a premier quote unquote sack guy either. So people are kind of talking about this as if this is going to be a huge moment. And in my opinion, I got to see something in order for him to make me say, oh wow, this guy is going to be a difference maker rushing the passer in the second half, because what I saw last year, it's just not there yet. Now obviously you expect progression from a player, and especially with a first round guy such as himself, but we've been waiting for first round progression for Jarvis Jones for a while. And yes, Jarvis Jones played a fantastic game, I thought, against New England, and that very well might have been Jarvis Jones' single best game as a professional. He still didn't record a sack. And yeah, I know he got hauled down a couple times, Drew Holden calls, and yes, that should be, if you, you know what, David, there should be, I'm all about stats and creating stats and how interceptions should be on quarterbacks if they're tipped or yada yada. There should probably be a times held sack or times.
Sure, just like pass interference calls should be yardage for wide receivers and quarterbacks, and yeah, to be a more accurate gauge, I agree.
Because that essentially, right, I mean, if you get a 10-yard penalty, and if you're the one that drew it on the guy across from you, that's as good as getting a sack. So, you know, it'd be
not quite as good because it's not a loss of down, but it's pretty darn close.
Right. Well, that's true, and on top of it, you are making them use one of their downs because plus you're not getting that free shot on the quarterback, which you know you never know what can happen there. But it's worth something. I mean, obviously, if you lose 10 yards at a time, you're putting your opposition in and probably a must pass situation on the following down. So that probably allows you to do some things there defensively. But we need more stats, David, and the Steelers need more sacks.
I concur. Okay, let's get to a few more of these. I think we've hit on the Brown and Bell type of thing a bunch of times. Ben's asking about that, and I think the answer is both. He also asked, is David DeCastro overrated? Is he having a bad season or just a couple of bad showings that won't be a trend? DeCastro's not having a great season. He is not going to be, you know, if they're legitimately, you know, looking at doing the film study to figure out who's going to be first team all pro. At this point in time, and things can change, David DeCastro doesn't deserve anybody's votes for anything. He's gone up against very good Steelers in their seven games so far. They've probably played four of the, you know, eight or ten best defensive lines in the league. So, you know, I will acknowledge that, as Mike likes to say, but they haven't been great. And, you know, Villanueva has been average at best, and you have to wonder, you know, you would think he's taking a step forward here, and you have to wonder, you know, who the starting left tackle is going to be for the Steelers next year. Is there a chance Hawkins could compete for that job with Villanueva? The right tackle position, you know, Chris Hubbard hadn't been a disaster, but he's not a dominant guy out there. I think Pouncey's been more or less as expected. I think Ramon's been more or less as expected, but no, hadn't been great, right?
Yeah, I mean, DeCastro has had his issues at times this year, specifically against pass rushes. You see him get knocked off his base, and that's kind of kind of unusual for him, you know, to get kind of powered back and get on skates or get on one leg. And we saw against who was it, the Dolphins, and the end result of that was Ben Roethlisberger getting kicked. And you know, that's one thing we hadn't even talked about in the show is what happened there. That was obviously a kick, a tip there, and with a guy like in Domagan Sue. I'm surprised he wasn't at least fined. I mean, you probably don't need to suspend a guy another game for that. But, I mean, it was a blatant kind of kick at Roethlisberger. And I bet that one smarted quite a bit. And Ben talked about that one immediately after the game. But DeCastro has gotten pushed. I mean, for what it's worth, the other guy is paid to play too, and DeCastro's gotten pushed around by some pretty big name guys. That doesn't make it right by any means, but he could definitely have stood to have played better so far, and we'll see what the second half holds. Right, I'm not worried about him overall, though, to be honest with you, David. I'm not worried about Ramon, not worried about Pouncey, to be honest with you. Even though Villanueva, you know, can technically be called the weakest link in this offensive line, he hasn't been awful. I mean, he's had his moments, but in my opinion, I could live with this five moving forward for the next two seasons.
And it very well may be with this five for the the next couple seasons. That's a distinct possibility. Here's a good one here that Jeffrey Miller asks: should the Steelers try to acquire this up-and-coming corner named Valentino Blake?
Oh boy, that's a good one there. Yeah.
For those who don't know, Antoine changed his name at the beginning of the season to Valentino. So we're talking about Antoine.
Yeah,
Blake.
I watched that game, most of it, the Titans and the Jaguars last night, and he had a he had his moments in that game as well too. And of course, a lot of the Jaguars passing yards came after the game was well in hand. If you look at Blake Bortles' stats, you wonder what the hell happened in that game. Unfortunately, video doesn't come in the stat book, and if you saw that game, you know that there was a lot of garbage time in there. But yeah, they moved on for that boy. Dick LeBeau was pitching a shutout in the first half there, and I thought, did you see this stat on that game, how the Titans were the number one ranked percentage blitzing team so far during the season?
I did not see it. I did not watch much of that game. I was watching Pitt. I was watching the Penguins and a little NBA.
Well,
that
was the most exciting point of that game, was probably that stat.
I still don't know what Tom Brady was talking about when he said they're a 60 to 70% blitz team, because they get some old film by accident on the Steelers, because that was the most confusing thing I've heard this year.
Yeah, you know, I wish Tom would have really let it loose. His initial press conference right after the game, it looked like he wanted to go into what the Steelers were doing wrong, and he caught himself. If anybody gets a chance, go to Patriots.com and watch the post-game, Brady's post-game press conference, and how he slams the brakes on himself real quick to go ahead and say, well, they're a good defense, and they're a speedy defense. And it sounded like he wanted to get into really what the Steelers did wrong in that game, but he didn't. But yeah, they showed the stat last night how the Titans were the highest percentage blitzing team, and how LeBeau does that because, you know, he just, you know, doesn't have faith in his secondary, was the way Phil Simms pondered that one. So regardless, yeah, that's another good question. I doubt they'll be going after Valentino Blake anytime soon. And let's see, I think we have
let's get one more quick one before we get to our picks. There's a bunch of people that were asking about, you know, should the Steelers be blitzing more, and is Keith Butler at all at risk? Go ahead. I'll let you fire away first.
Should they be blitzing more? You know, I guess it depends on what you consider blitzing. Keith Butler doesn't consider when you send four guys blitzing. We do when we charted it. If a guy, you know, other than who we think's coming comes, well, we do. I think there are times where he should gamble more. Yes, sending the blitz. I don't think you can just sit back and blitz on second and nine and third and seven. I think there are times where he should probably think about potentially blitzing more. Is Keith Butler's job safe right now? Look, I'm not one that runs out there every week clamoring for people's jobs, whatnot, but I think you really have to take a hard look at personnel/scheme after this season. So take that for what it's worth. Now, in defense,
I think that's well put. I expect Keith Butler to be the defensive coordinator next year. But if this continues this year like it did last year for the rest of the year, I don't know that you can just say, okay, you know, we're going to do it the same way. They changed some of the personnel. I realize, you know, not everything's gone perfectly, but, you know, Senquez Golson ain't going to make this a great defense. So, and I don't know, maybe Bud Dupree can make it a better defense, but they've got, you know, they got some things to think
there,
about.
There comes a time where, I mean, you definitely have to look at what he's given to work with, too. There's not a lot of, I mean, outside of Cameron, you know, looking specifically at the outside linebacker group, there's, I mean, is the talent there to get out to run the scheme that they're running, you know, and to get out to the quarterback? I mean, it's all nice and fine to say, you know, that Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt need to be whooping the guy across him more and getting more sacks. But, you know, the sacks come from all areas. And when you have outside linebackers in a 3-4, that's usually generally where you're seeing most of your outside pressures and sacks from. And you're just not getting that right now. And, you know, I think even one of our listeners, you know, talked about, you know, why won't the Steelers run more of a three-man, you know, their normal base front plus just one outside linebacker. And I say, yeah, I mean, that's all fine and good, but I mean, when you got to remember that Steelers like to drop one of those outside linebackers as well too. So if you're getting to it, Hargrave and Cameron Hayward out there on the field with just one outside linebacker, you know, are you going to designate Hayward as being the guy that you're going to drop into space more often, you know, than not? I mean, I understand that the question mostly centers around those being the four guys getting after the quarterback. But I mean, there's going to be you know, times where you're going to only want to rush three as well too. So, you know, there's a reason that you have outside linebackers out on this field at times as part of your nickel and dime defense. It's because of what they bring you athletically, and the ability to drop these guys and also to set the edge and everything that goes along with that. So, you know, I understand the premise, you know, get your best players out there on the field, but you have to ask yourself, is Javon Hargrave right now one of your best pass rushers? And, yeah, I guess an argument can be made based on what your other outside linebackers are doing that could be yes, but, you know, I don't think you're going to see that a lot moving forward here. And plain and short, I don't think Butler has a lot to work with, and I don't think he's done a good job of working with what he has, if that makes sense. So I really think both things need to be looked at. And I think we have another question somewhere along in here about drafting an outside linebacker. And I think one of the readers noted, you know, maybe a couple of these guys the Steelers going after in free agency. Look, they got to do whatever they need to do to address this outside linebacker position during the offseason, because you're not going to have James Harrison. You're probably not going to have Jarvis Jones back. There's a chance, there's an outside chance that Arthur Motes is not in your future pass this year. Anthony Ciccolo is just a guy. I mean, they need some outside linebacker help. And look, if there was any time, and I'm not one that runs out there clamoring for a team to switch to a 4-3 because you lack personnel at this point, if there ever there was a time to maybe switch to a 4-3, this upcoming draft and offseason would probably be the time.
Well, you can argue that maybe that's really what they play anyway. So
they play so much nickel anyway, you know. And if that's the case, then why not make the full jump, you know? But I mean, yeah, I mean, you, Mike Tomlin.
A 4-2-5 is really, you know, you wonder if, however you want to classify it, but you know, 4-2-5 is what the Steelers play, and you know, we can call it whatever we want to call it, but you know, this really isn't a 3-4 team anymore,
right?
And they're not, you know, it's the game,
right? Because I mean, and because of that, you better just get any guy you can to get it. You know, you got to get out of the mold of the, well, the undersized defensive end, you know, the undersized 4-3 defensive end that fits our scheme, yada, yada, can move out in space, play, convert to, sure, this guy hasn't stood up before. You know, the whole thing that went into deciphering, you know, what kind of guy you're going to draft that kind of fits your defense. I don't think it's about that anymore. I think it's, can this guy get after the damn quarterback now, and does he have any athletic ability that maybe we can teach him to drop into space on some? Because, yes, you're going to have him on the field essentially as a defensive end moving forward. Now, obviously, I'm not a fan of just taking these tall, lanky guys that can't do squat against against the run. When I say this, I know I'm making one listener mad. However, if that guy just needs to be a situational player and come in to get after the quarterback on two downs, you know, every other series, I'm fine with that too, because you got to start doing a better job of getting after the quarterback and getting pressure, because the Steelers are just not doing that, and that's why they're not getting these easy get-offs on third downs, these easy interceptions that we see so many other teams get. So they better go defense a lot in this next draft. They need a lot of it.
Okay, let's roll along and get to our picks. And I know 2 weeks ago I had a good week, you had a bad week, and that put us both we were even and both around 500. And 2 years ago you smoked me and I got the best of you last year. So I don't know where we stand right now, but let's roll through these and see where we are.
All right, what you got first there? You had Tennessee last night. I had Jacksonville, and the line was 3 on that. So you're 1-0 on me right now.
Okay, buys this week, Baltimore, Los Angeles, Miami, the Giants, Pittsburgh, and San Fran. So obviously Pittsburgh and Baltimore both coming off the bye next week. Wembley Stadium, London, England, Washington, Cincinnati, Bengals -3, Dave. It's a Bengals team that's healthy. Their injury report is blank, so I guess that means Tyler Eifert will be there. I still think the Bengals are a good football team. Washington's been much better as the season has gone on here. They've been able to run the football, but they're not going to have Matt Jones this week. I'll take the Bengals -3 in a close
game.
Yeah,
I'll be rooting for Washington, of course, but my money says Bengals in this one as well, too. Boy, it'd be nice for the Steelers to get a gift here, but I don't think it's going to happen. Give me the Bengals, lay those points.
Green Bay gets 3 in Atlanta, and I'm going to take him. I keep thinking, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to get better. Maybe the game we saw primetime last week was the start of things getting better. The Falcons defense is still having trouble. Is this going to be a replay of last year's collapse? I don't know, but I do think the Packers are going to win this one outright.
I think Atlanta's going to take care of them at home. That can be a tough place to play, and Matty Ice sometimes at home can really, really light it up. Green Bay's got running back problems. What are they going to do? I mean, have Aaron Rodgers drop back 55 times in this game? He might have to. I'm not a big believer in Atlanta just yet, but at home, this is a game that they should probably take care of, and I think they will. I think they'll win it by a touchdown. So give me Atlanta to cover at home.
Detroit at Houston. Detroit +2.5. I'll take the Lions.
Oh wow!
Matthew Stafford's playing as well as anybody in the
league
right
and,
now.
Yeah, and boy, how is Brock Osweiler? How long is Brock Osweiler going to be in Houston now? John Elway really looks like a genius for doing what he did with that whole quarterback situation there in Denver. I'm not an Osweiler believer. They could be without Lamar Miller in this game as well too. Injured his shoulder in that game the other night. Detroit, good enough, I think, and good enough away as well too. Give me Detroit and to win this one outright and cover.
Seattle at New Orleans. Seattle's -2.5. I'll take the Seahawks.
Yeah, boy, this is a tough game on the road. You know, I just got a gut feeling about this one. Give me New Orleans at home to cover.
Bills are hosting the Pats, trying to be the first team to sweep them in forever in the division. The line's only 5. Obviously, the Bills beat them once. And, you know, if anybody has the ticket, Rex might have the ticket. But seeing the Pats last week and seeing the stuff they left on the table, I think they'll clean it up. And I think they'll win by more than a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm with you here as well, too. I can't see. It'd be nice if Buffalo were to win this one. But, I just think the Patriots are going to be too much in this one. And I think it's going to be an easy cover at that.
Jets -3 at Cleveland. Josh McCown, a quarterback for the Browns. Fitzpatrick for the Jets. I think the Jets are going to win a couple games here, and it's all of a sudden going to be a conversation again about the AFC wild card. So, I keep rooting for the Browns to win a couple, but I think the Jets will win. And I think they'll cover.
Yeah, I tend to go with you as well, too. I mean, Cleveland's been in some close, you know, close games. I think they've covered a pretty decent amount of time this year, haven't they? So far, but I, you know, I don't think they're going to do it this time. Look, I mean, give them a good chance to showcase McCown and probably trade him before the deadline, right? Deadline's on Tuesday. If Josh McCown does anything, is there a team out there maybe willing to bite? Probably not. But regardless, this is going to be a big game for McCown to probably secure maybe a backup job around the league somewhere next year. Give me the Jets.
Tampa. Oakland goes to Tampa. Oakland is 4-0 on the East Coast this year, so throw that one out. But I will take Tampa Bay in this one in a pick'em.
Would you have taken Tampa Bay in a pick'em at the beginning of the season in this game?
No, Raiders defense not looking too good.
Look at their adjusted net yards per attempt stat, not good at all. I'm going to go with you on this one. Give me Tampa Bay to cover at home.
Okay, next one is the Colts hosting the Chiefs. And Colts are getting 2.5 at home. I really like the way the Chiefs handled the Raiders, and I think, you know, Chiefs are going to be there. The AFC West might be the best division of football, maybe by a long shot. And so I'm going to go. I'm going to go Chiefs here minus 2.5.
I'm
going to
go the other side of the fence. I'm going to go. I'm going to go with Andrew Luck and that offense. I think that offense will be able to move the football a little bit against KC. So I could see this one. I be quite honest with you. I could see this one kind of getting away from KC early, maybe. If Indy can put some quick points on the board. So not only do I like Indy to the underdog to cover here, I think they cover this one by a lot. I think they win by a lot here.
The Chargers go to Denver. And, you know, I'm heavy on the Chargers bandwagon here. And maybe Denver got it sorted out. Maybe they didn't. The line's 4.5. I think the world's going to be on the Broncos. Give me the Chargers, and, you know, let's make it the upset special.
You know, I don't know what to do with this game for sure. At times, Denver looks very, very good. I mean, they got a good receiving core. They got capable running backs, even though they'll be without – I guess it sounds like they'll be without C.J. Anderson here now. But yeah, and they definitely got the defense to get after Phillip Rivers in this game. That's going to be the difference, I think. So give me Denver to cover this one at home.
Arizona goes to Carolina, and the loser here, you know, certainly for Carolina's situation, their season's over if they lose this one. Arizona's going to be in some trouble in that NFC if they lose this one. They're getting 3 on the road. I think the Cardinals win, you know, do the last rites for the Panthers.
Yeah, boy, that Arizona defense is a lot better than what people give them credit for here. I think the only question right now with Arizona is so banged up on the offensive side of the football. As long as they don't let Carson Palmer get hit a ton in this game, I think they should be fine. Carolina, boy, what a fall they have had. Give me Arizona on the road you know, to take care of this one.
Sunday night, the Eagles go to Dallas, -4 for the home team. Great article on ESPN.com of comparing Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz, and rate their numbers and their QBR. And the guy who's head of ESPN analytics is a guy named Brian Burke. He's a former Navy pilot. He's going to be on my show today at 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock is going to be analytics hour. We'll talk about kind of different analytics of what we know. It'll be football the first half hour and hockey kind of the second half hour. But he's an interesting guy. And, you know, it goes out, you know, we've had passer rating forever. Passer rating's not a great number, but it's the best number we had. But QBR continues to be refined. And the article, he didn't write the article, but the article goes into talking about the context of the defense you play against, third down conversions, scrambles, other things. Passer rating only takes into account throws. This is a much more contextualized, and it's a developing stat. It's based on 0 to 100, so it's pretty easy to understand what where you are on the scale. Go find the article. It's on my timeline on Twitter, at David M. Todd. But it's just hit under the NFL tab, and you'll find it. But really good stuff, and it's a number. You know, QBR is a much more useful number now, so I highly recommend it. And as you might imagine, Dak is much, much better than Carson Wentz, even though their physical stats look very similar. It's context of who they've played, et cetera. Anyway, so these two guys are going to go at it Sunday night. I'll take the Cowboys minus
the
four.
I think that running game of Dallas really going to be the difference in this one. That's the way you're going to beat that Philadelphia defense is to run at them first and kind of get those guys back on their heels, I think. You watch you didn't watch that Philadelphia-Minnesota game. Boy, the amount of turnovers swap back and forth in that game was disturbing, to say the least. But I think I like Dallas in this game as well, too, at home. I think Dak just gives you a little bit more athleticism outside that pocket than Wentz does. I like Wentz. I think Wentz is going to be a great quarterback in this league. And I think I said right at the beginning of the draft process, he was my top quarterback in here. But I think he's still a little bit of ways away from that. I think Dallas is the more probably complete team right now. Give me Dallas to cover at home.
All right, last game, Minnesota-Chicago Monday night. Minnesota is a 4-point favorite. I'll take the Bucks.
Yeah, I will too. I mean, even though their offense showed some flaws in that game against Philadelphia that I mentioned, their defense is just so good, man. You want to talk about a defense that can get after a quarterback on almost any down and kind of force turnovers as well, too. Go put on the tape of them. I don't see Minnesota having any problem with Chicago on the road.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. We're again running a little long. We'll try to get these things back under an hour. I know that for people's commutes and stuff like that, when we're pushing an hour, we're getting up a little longer than people would like. So we'll try and do a better job of our clock management as we figure things out. And also remember our buddy Craig Oxane, the mortgage process. Yeah, I like the new tag. It can sometimes be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Our buddy Craig Oxane can guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Cleveland. And if you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, give Craig Oxane a call, an experienced nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. You can call Craig at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email him at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or just apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing
Lender.
The red
zone defense wasn't as good as it is.
So, yeah, if you can hear my show at 5, we'll have some analytics. And Dave and I will be back on Monday. I'm going to be off on vacation next week, so I'll be working these in a little bit around that, but shouldn't be any problem.
We'll see how much we have to talk about on Monday. And, of course, Mike Tomlin press conference on Tuesday. Should be an interesting week with the injury report and Roethlisberger and everything that goes along with that. Hopefully we're talking about a few AFC North losses, most notably the Bengals here, because they're really the only meaningful team in the AFC North who's going to be playing this week as well too. People can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button up in the right upper right navigational bar. And until Monday, everybody, we appreciate listening and appreciate all the great questions we got on Twitter as well.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.